Our gracious Heavenly Father, again we come back into Thy presence to worship Thee again, to recognize that out of Thy counsel and through the inspiration of Thy Spirit, we find achievement and growth for Thy kingdom. Thy Spirit will grant unto us guidance and cause us to recognize the situations through which we pass. Teach us to evaluate the situations that occur in our environment. Grant unto us the knowledge of binding the darkness and loosing the light. Create within us a vision of our responsibility, and cause us, our Father, to oppose all that would destroy Thy kingdom. As we survey the situations we pass through, we pray for great leadership in this nation, that there shall be raised up men who by devotion and by principle will stand for the things which are ordained in Thy word and become the foundation of our civilization. We pray, our Father, in this hour, as we survey the problems that are before us, that we can learn how we may obey Thee and how we can accomplish that which will do the greatest good in Thy kingdom. But it's only out of the inspiration of Thy Spirit, only by the resistance of that which is evil, the creation of that which by inspiration and vision we possess, that we shall build these things which You have ordained us to build. We have no other foundation than that which is laid in Thee. We recognize that no civilization or culture can survive except to be founded upon truth and Thy personality. So we commit ourselves to Thy hand tonight. We pray Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And we ask it. Amen. Tonight we are talking about the great battle which is going on in this nation for the minds of our youth. A great many people do not realize how closely related to our national situations or the development in our society are philosophies and ideologies diametrically opposed to all that has made America great and the sources from whence come our great progress. There is no doubt that this nation has been begotten in freedom from the days of our founding fathers. They came into this nation with a great desire to have complete freedom. And even though out of the background of certain least common denominators, such as generally racial least common denominators, for though there are many nations in Europe, they mostly were white nations, and at least there was one racial background. Their faiths were diversified, but they did recognize that Jesus was the Christ. But at the same time, there did exist and can exist even in such society certain amount of persecution and certain complexes which seek to determine just what the individual will or will not believe. Most of the founding fathers of our nation and colonists who came over here to lay the foundation came over to worship God as they pleased and to develop in the resources of this nation, which as yet were only colonial vision to them, an opportunity of attainment which could not be denied them in the great achievements which were ahead and the destiny which was behind them. We must remember that God Almighty had in the blueprint of prophecy declared the great development that would take place in this Western world, as this great land carved out of the wilderness would grow into a mighty nation, and as Revelation was to announce its symbol, the outstretched wings of the eagle, who was to lead in a great leadership program of the kingdom of God against the powers of darkness. I think as we stand in this particular hour of our great struggle, it is quite obvious that the powers of world communism today are attempting to take over the earth, that they will do this with military power, that they will seek to accomplish this end also with all of the instruments at their hand and with all subtlety, and that their design, if they cannot secure surrender upon the part of our civilization from within, an acknowledgement and an appeasement upon the part of our leadership, would be to use the powers of military conquest. But they would say this to see how much they might be able to receive in working order if they can overthrow our way of life. And to accomplish this, they must capture the brains of leadership, and they must capture the brains of a great number of the masses of the people, and then brainwash them and subordinate them to their own philosophies of life. Through no one who has traveled around the world or has viewed the actual output inside the Soviet Union in those things essential to civilization of our day would ever believe that it would be possible for someone from a half-nation like the United States to fall for this doctrine. But today the doctrine of communism is being pushed at quite rapid rates. It does not seem to be making, in some sense, the gain that some anticipated. If they're thinking in terms of bearded Bolsheviks taking over throughout all our society, though I will admit that since the Castro activities down in Cuba, there's been more bearded beatniks in America than we've seen in a long time. And this bearded philosophy seemed to grow out of the beatnik operation with the Castro beard accompanying it. But generally speaking, we did not see the type of revolution that some people always had in mind when they thought of revolution. But there is something that's been taking place in this country for some time, and it's been a part of a very skilled and careful design. If you're acquainted with the beginnings of revolution, and you know how it started, and you know about the secret gatherings that were held all over the world by the secret organizations of people that designed a world revolution, you'll understand that out of their secret world Kahila, their strategy was to capture some part of the world, and their revolution was designed to move where they could gather manpower, and where the seizure would, they thought, be most easy. Actually, the revolution today was financed by highly strong international banking power in many of the great nations of the world, and many of them right here in the United States contributed to it, and almost all of them were non-Christian. Most of those who have helped you engage in the program of the revolution have no ethnic background with the great white Christian nations of the world. This great nation has been basically built by Christians, and almost all the trouble we have had in the years since the creation of our nation to now have been manipulations in our economy and manipulations from insidious forces seeking to take over the liberties of this country and reduce it to a sociological slavery which they had designed. And at the same time, the whole Russian Revolution was a part of this design. And I want you to know that the powers that plotted that revolution are plotting one here. Probably that is no more completely successful long-range plan that an enemy could engage in if he's got lots of time than to try to gradually train the children of a nation in the direction of revolution. To train the children of a nation until they do not any longer believe in the great principles that have guided their fathers and their forefathers in making their nation great. Basically, if they can release the influence of the home and the structure of its spiritual foundation from having any implication or even any influence upon the young people of that home, and can substitute in place of that philosophy of truth and those fundamental virtues of both patriotism and a love for liberty that come with spiritual truth, if they can replace this with error, and they can fill it with concepts which they are feeding the child and accomplish this constantly and steadily, they'll produce a whole generation divorced from the great principles that make a nation great. Now, you may not think that this is a part of the strategy, but I want you to know that there is unlimited amounts of evidence in the files of the Un-American Activities Committee in Washington, in the records of internal security committees, and in the branches of the Federal Bureau of Investigations research concerning a continual and constant and steady design to take over the schools of our nation and replace American history with perverted concepts of world socialism, and to destroy the concept of our national greatness and make a second place in the thinking of the child as he studies his history and as he studies the social sciences prepared for him, and make him believe that the great progress of the world is only being achieved in communist and sociologically revolutionary nations which are under the impact of communist philosophy. If you think that this isn't a successful program, let me tell you that in Purdue University, just a few years ago, I believe in 1958, in this great university, they then had 15,000 high school students who were asked to fill out a questionnaire concerning now what they thought and what they believed. And 56% of the 15,000 students said that they believed that the policies of economy and the thinking as it related to the division of properties and lands, as Karl Marx advocated it, was more correct than the way we lived under the existing United States government. 56% of 15,000 high school students filling out the questionnaire at Purdue embraced the philosophies of Karl Marx and had admitted they were taught this in the high schools they attended. I think that's very significant. I think it's also significant that in a university such as Stanford University, that one of the leading textbooks on economy by Beckwith virtually supports the fact that all of the American concepts of enterprise are outmoded and that none of them are successful or will be sufficient in helping us to continue on our course of destiny, and that we must therefore embrace socialism as the only working system. And then it advocates that such socialism is a complete government control of everything from the cradle to the grave, and the individual has now reached the point where he is living in a state of situation so complicated because of the diversity of employment, because of the many specializations in industry of every type, that it would be impossible for him to live in a society that the state did not control it from one end to the other. and that the concepts of private enterprise were not only outmoded, but that they will not operate any longer. In fact, I have in my library now a copy of Mr. Beckwith's philosophy on the economy as is being taught in Stanford University, what was once one of the great conservative schools of our nation. There are a great number of such textbooks. I have in my possession a number of these textbooks from colleges and universities all over the land. The man today who has influenced and had more impact upon the present cabinet of the present president of the United States is an economic professor named Hansen, and this individual advocates in his thinking what I would call open Marxist socialism. And Professor Schlesinger, one of the most powerful and influential forces in Mr. Kennedy's administration, was educated under this principle and continued as a professor himself to support the political and economic philosophies of the Marxist Revolution. A great number of those appointed, and you'll have to admit that an unprecedented number of those appointed to the positions of administration in the government in our time were Harvard students. In fact, so many are Harvard students that there's a great hue and cry from the other universities as to why there has been so much discrimination against them in the picking of high cabinet offices. And among the conservatives, the clip has now arrived that the way to get a government job is to go to Harvard and turn left. But the strange thing is that when these were young men studying social science, that social sciences, economic sciences, and political philosophy, which they received in what was once one of America's great universities, was one of collectivism, was one of socialistic government control from the cradle to the grave, and a design to take over and rule the lives of people with a super bureaucracy answerable only to a super administration above that, which is virtually the commissar program of the Soviets. Students of it know that 3 million people run all the Soviet Union in its brackets of administration and its education. We have had for a long time in these United States a advancing program of education which was considered to be one of the finest on the face of the earth. Back in 1839, Horace Mann got up and made a great address in Massachusetts about the fact that one of the most important things that any society needed was to be educated in moral and spiritual principles, and therefore the Word of God was the most important foundation for a rising civilization and for the building of a great people. And then add to the knowledge of the Word of God a knowledge of the ability to read the Word of God and to read all things that would be of any value to the individual, but namely reading, an important avenue, and that after that the ability to write so that he could also put down his thoughts was most important. And to do this correctly, he should be able to spell the words as well as pronounce those that he read and he wrote. And then only one other thing was most important, Horace Mann said, and that was that a man could add, subtract, and divide and learn from the rudimentary principles of mathematics to the highest capacity of his mind to absorb them, the principles of mathematics, which are very vital to an understanding of many things in any society. But that these were the most important things that a man could know. First, he must know spiritual principle, and he therefore must be guided by a spiritual mentor. And Horace Mann, as a good down-to-earth Christian American, could think of nothing better than the Word of God, nor any foundation more important for men to know. For actually, if men know this, they have confidence and assurances that they can find out anything else they want to apply themselves to know. And it's pretty hard for people to know the Word of God if they can't read it, and it's very, very hard for them to communicate their ideas if they can't write. And surely they should be able to spell or at least understand phonetics in order to carry forward their concepts. And mathematics then becomes the principle from this point on of a great number of necessary patterns of science. Horace Mann was not limiting education to this, but he was saying something that today would be called heresy by many educators. He was establishing that reading, writing, and arithmetic were very, very important, and so we have had the so-called symbol of the three R's. There wasn't any doubt about the fact that he had persuaded and helped to persuade the states that one of the best things they could invest their money in was education of their children. And that isn't, in my mind, any opposition to a public school system as long as it operates within the framework of the Constitution of the United States. Not, my friends, as a group today of revolutionary judges may seek to interpret it, but as the Constitution was intended to be interpreted by the men that framed it. There is probably nothing, therefore, more vital, because almost all the avenues of knowledge which are available to man can be added to if a man can fulfill these responsibilities for his own advancement of being able to read, write, and being able to compute and to figure. Suppose I tell you that something's happened to our public schools, which from the period of their formation in state after state, though many private schools also existed and were doing excellent jobs, the highest universities of our nation were almost all of them schools that were founded by men with spiritual vision. That's how Harvard and Princeton and Yale and these great schools came into existence, and nobody was ashamed of the fact that the church had loaned its influence and invested out of its own money to create schools of higher education where religious principles were most important. When the president of Harvard University first opened the halls of that great college for advanced students to come in, he said, "It is more important to this faculty and to the dean of this university that men coming to this school learn the principles of responsible, moral, Christian living under the ethics of the Bible and develop a deep and fervent final faith in Jesus Christ as the Lord and Savior of Christians than it is for them to attain anything else while in this university." I want you to know that its scholastic standards were among the highest, and in those days it was considered to be the one school in which the highest patterns of mathematical adjustment, as well as understanding its principles to the then growing sciences, could be found. As a school that based its concepts of law upon a growing knowledge of law, and not only British and American concepts of law, British common law and divine law, but its concepts of law as it related to spiritual principles were one of the concepts of thought taught within that early university. I think that it's a rather strange thing today that we have powerful organizations inside of education. We have organizations like the National Educational Alliance, organizations like the Progressive Educational Alliance and Association. We have two associations, I understand, and one alliance. And each one of these organizations believe it is far more important that we adjust the child with social sciences, teach him how to get along with everybody according to a new set of ideas, and make him fit into the progressive social revolution which they are attempting to put over, then it is important for him to learn how to read, write, multiply, and subtract and divide. Did you know that we lost great numbers of lives, even among pilots in World War II, because they didn't know how to apply simple mathematics that they should have been able to have received in the fifth grade? You know that with many of the things which we teach in schools today in preparing pilots, higher mathematics reduced now to short forms, and many of them to fast codifications of numerical patterns which they follow. We have given unto them a great number of technological instruments to help them on their way. They skim through the course, they phone, they follow any course they can to get by to get their wings, and depend upon mechanical contrivances of our technological ingenuity to take them through many of the tough things that will occur. In fact, I talked to an airline pilot who could not be able to compute any of his own navigation charts if he had to compute them, and because he operates on radar beams, because he has with him other assistants, all of which are using mechanical contrivances, the idea of plotting a course or making any navigation outside of these mechanical processes would be almost impossible for him to perform, even though he's passed and gotten by and gotten in on this. During the period of World War II, when the Flying Tigers were among the first that were battling in Chinese areas and in the Himalayas, they were without the assistance of radar beams and without the assistance of certain magnetic compass devices that were on radio beam and operated with this procedure. Many things which we had set up for the assistance of our pilots in the European theater of the war and throughout the Atlantic and Pacific crossings were not there. The fact is that Major Chenault and then later General Chenault reported that he lost a high number of pilots because they had reduced all the navigation to subtraction, multiplication, and addition, and a process of understanding the 360 degrees of a circle, and that their navigation had been reduced to simple formula, and all they had to be able to do was subtract, multiply, or add three columns of figures, or in three figures. And if they made a mistake, however, of 1 degree, they would be off some 60 miles, and it would end with the death of the pilot or a crash into the mountains or coming down in enemy territory. And he said that among those rescued, and among a great number of them that were lost, that were not rescued, there were errors in navigation, but in checking up on the source of it and looking over the calculation, he discovered that the average American high school and college student, when he got out, had forgotten how or did not have enough experience in multiplication and division up to three figures to be able to compute a course, and would miss that one degree at 60 miles. You say, well, that's hard to understand. Well, it surely is. But we discovered that when we were trying to train men in the last war in artillery, that they had to reject, and in, they had even computed charts for them, so they didn't have to be skilled in trigonometry at all. All they had to do to finally use the charts and the equipment and to be able to handle the artillery equipment was to know simple mathematics. And they finally had to drop out from artillery services in the course of that period. 5 out of every 10 they sought to put on the artillery range and even develop into non-commissioned range officers. They couldn't use, my friends, half of the graduates that were coming out of our high schools and our colleges because they just didn't know how to do these simple functions. Now, this is only one thing that is involved in this pattern. Suppose I were to tell you that while we have suddenly supplanted through the spreading growth of these organizations, and there are several names that I could say are identified with it. One of the men today who moves as a prime mover in the field of education, and one of the leaders in the group of progressive educationists and National Educational Alliance leadership. There are two men. One of them is John Dewey, and the other is Rugg, and I consider both of these men are traitors to our civilization. For Deweyism has become progressiveness, supposedly, in education. And it is more important that a teacher follow the instructions of the organization's design and teaching than to know the subject he's supposed to be teaching the child. It is more important they follow through with actually what the shadow boxing play than to actually engage in seeking to instruct the child. I have material that is unprecedented in its source and in its accuracy, which is government-provided material, that in their own investigations, now this is a strange thing, here's a great nation and a powerful nation, and we have institutions in our nation that are seeking to find out how to save the nation and how to eliminate the problems which are the catastrophe of our society. And when they do this, Congress will use one of these organizations to try to find a way to legislate, but there is no legislation, of course, that is moved on the part of the Congress to the field of education. But they have discovered that a careful revolution is trying to take over a whole generation of our children. That the textbooks that are being endorsed today in history, as they're being used in the grammar schools of over 40 of our states, have eliminated any pattern of great leadership and spiritual development and patriotic achievement in the lives of men like George Washington and others who, in the greatness of their country, helped to provide the greatness of that country with their vision. In fact, if anything, we are being told that to develop a love of country, which was once called patriotism, is not a good thing, that we should learn to love the world and not the country, and that the more quickly we lose a love for nation and for country, the more quickly we'll build one world and there'll be nothing for anybody to fight about. Now, they start teaching the children in the grammar school level in history that the great troubles of the world today have come from nations being separate entities instead of nations being all organized together as one great institution. In fact, the geographies, which are virtually today thinned down from giving any real material essential in grammar school use, I have looked over some late geographies. One of them I looked over the other day was so filled with praise of the Soviet Union and its achievement that you could get all the information you wanted and all kinds of pictures to dummy up the fact that the Soviet Union was the most advanced, most progressive place on the face of the earth. And the same system showed America with sharecroppers hand-cutting cane and working with hands by picking cotton by hand, while they were showing the Soviet Union with vast new cotton picking machines that were going through picking the cotton. Now, in the first place, it was a slanted lie. One of the big problems right now for cotton pickers is how to get enough work picking cotton because we've got so many machines picking it. They would try to make you think that all this automatic development in machine activity was a greater advance and, of course, a great achievement over the hand method, but that we were behind and the communist world was ahead. When very, very frankly, practically every technological achievement of our time has been taken from us and duplicated by them. In fact, we taught them the assembly line and we taught them how to apply these problems. Now, I do not tell you that unless you find an actually scientific and divinely ordained process for handling the procedures of your economy, that you're not in trouble.
Because the smarter you get, the more men you're putting out of work, and you're going to have to learn a divine principle for putting back into the hands of men a profitable, necessary share and dividend in the things which are being produced by our society. But I want you to know that we are not going to arrive at that by going into a tyrannical economic slavery, and that the cure-all for America's technological problems is not, my friends, to surrender independence and become a part of the Soviet Union. In fact, I can assure you this, that I have National Educational Alliance organizational material in which they openly advocate that the basic responsibility of the National Educational Alliance as a teacher's organization is to start the development and achievement of the great new frontier. Now, long before, I can show you this from 1934. Before we heard about Kennedy's global frontiers that came out of Chester Bowe's communist platform for the Democratic Party, they were talking about the new frontiers, that we must embrace the new frontiers of thought, and that these new frontiers of thought was the development of a completely controlled society. Just about a month ago, they rolled off the press Professor Hansen's book, showing the background of the influence that guided him as well. For Mr. Hansen, don't blame the Swedes for Mr. Hansen, even though Mr. Hansen is partially Swedish, because there is a strong mental background and control of the same international banking guild and the same international manipulative guild that today is represented by so many members on the cabinet. But in this volume of Mr. Hansen's, we now find out what he taught his economy students at Yale. We find out what it is mine. We tell you to get U.S. News 2 weeks ago, and you'll get some synopsis of what Mr. Hansen taught Mr. Kennedy's cabinet. If you're in trouble today politically, it's because they captured these men when they were in college. It's because they were training these men in error when they were being prepared for their concepts of responsibility to life. Of course, I'll recognize that a high percentage of them are Jewish, and they were a part of an infinity with a world designed to subordinate the whole world to their administration. So they were probably a lost cause to begin with, and they would have been a lost cause in any school, but we had too much of that influence in the days when the Harvard University Law School had none other than Felix Frankfurter on its staff teaching, and it was Felix Frankfurter that trained men like Alger Hiss to become the kind of communist front leaders they were, and the great brain leadership of communist activities, which by their own influence they later put in our State Department, and men like Harry Dexter White that went to the Treasury and then into a high secretariat in the United Nations, alias Weiss. These men were trained by Mr. Frankfurter, not when he was on the Supreme Court bench, but when he was a Harvard professor. Again, I show you that this is a foundation where our errors beget. In this great Christian nation, we had political forces which captured and surrounded administrations and were trying to capture and gain control of our educational institutions to make them demand that they had academic freedom, and the state should not interfere with this academic freedom, and that this academic freedom called for bringing in professors from Russia and from behind the Iron Curtain, so that their vast knowledge and their assistance in all the fields, from political science to languages and to social philosophy, be introduced to our students and our colleges, that they might understand and know firsthand what was going on, or that we might have the advantage of these experts in their field. In exchange, of course, we were going to send some of our professors, and they were going to teach behind the Iron Curtain, and they were going to tour Moscow. And this policy was being demanded by the Deweyites and the Rug Fowlers and a great number of others. Academic freedom, and they put on so much pressure that pretty soon we were hearing about exchange professors. I want you to know this, that one of the greatest curses that ever came to America was during World War II, where we got a lot of refugee professors that came in here. They were all fleeing from somewhere, and they came to America. What could they contribute? They all declared they had a great academic background, and they knew more about teaching our students and the students of the world than anybody. And for some reason, about 1,400 Jewish professors went to work in our colleges during the first 2 years of World War II. Oh, of course, they were fleeing from Germany.
My friends, some of them never came from Germany. They came right out of Moscow, and they came directly by boat with a long story on how their brothers and sisters had been killed inside of Berlin.
And I want to say this, just for one moment. I do not believe now or at any time that there were 6 million Jews killed in World War II. I don't believe there were that many in Germany or all Europe. But I believe those that came out of the Soviet Union and came out of the various areas from whence they had fled by design came to these United States, and they've been walking the streets of this country ever since. And I might say that right now this is timely because we're hearing an awful lot about the Eichmann case. There's just one thing I want to refresh your mind with tonight, that I don't believe that Mr. Eichmann committed any crime against 6 million Jews, because not that many were involved anyhow. But this is a battle for the capture of the brain of your children. I listened to Columbia Broadcasting System with one of its commentators last Thursday night say that the greatest opportunity which we now have to educate our young people and anybody that was born 28 years ago up to now, here or in Europe or anywhere in the world, had no idea about the terrible conditions of the German government, the brutality of Hitlerism and these things, and that now this Eichmann case was the greatest blessing for us to teach our children for all time about the tremendous evils of what this thing consisted of. And he says, therefore, I think that it is of a great advantage that we are giving in all the press and radio, television and radio and newspapers, the high sign, to give this all the play we can so that we can educate our students and our children. He said, already it's taking fruit. A great wave of anti-Germanism is arising in America, and Germany even feels that, and they're sending over Brandt to have a discussion to find out what it's about. But he says, besides the guilt complex that we are now giving to these German youth that had no idea about the terrible brutality of the system their country had been under before they were born. See what I mean? The battle for the minds of our children. I'm going to tell you something that's quite significant here. In the first place, the 6 million Jews are not dead, they're walking the streets of America. Number two, I don't know anything about that crime because it's not been proven. But there is a crime I do know about and has been proven. I know that Israel, violating all international law, violating the existence of all agreements of nations, went into Israel with secret agents, that they captured in Israel a man who was dwelling under Argentine law and had complied with citizenship. They took him, a kidnapped individual, out of Argentina. They had brought pressure and trouble upon his family. And when they got him kidnapped in Israel, they announced that we have taken Mr. Eichmann out of Argentina. Now, the law says that if there is a government that has a claim against a criminal, that there is international law and the procedure is extradition. And extradition treaties are the way this is negotiated. Of course, you wouldn't expect the average child in school to know that because he hasn't even been taught civics nowadays and he doesn't know anything about his own government, let alone international laws, though he's being taught a lot about the United Nations from a slanted aspect. But even the groundwork of the United Nations would not support the fact that you can kidnap a man from one nation and take him to another and never lay any charge or call for extradition, which is a legal way. Now, the government of Israel was not in existence in the days of the Hitler government and in the days when Mr. Eichmann was supposed to have committed his crime. There could not have been any crimes committed against the Israel government since this government was non-existent and as such has no jurisdiction in the matter today. Therefore, if you want a crime, here's a crime. The illegal extradition of a man by kidnapping, the carrying of this man over to a country where he was grilled under bright lights with lobotomy, brainwashing, hypnotism, and the needle. And I tell you, don't you believe now? Or any time from the first published statement, anything that comes out of Eichmann's mouth, the man no longer controls his own mind. There are no more crooked, evil, vicious people on the face of the earth than the people that make up Israel and Jewry. I would establish this clearly because this is the power today that is perverting the minds of your young people, is capturing your school system to try to turn it away from its Christian foundation, and lay a great cry that there is too much religion in our institutions of education and want to remove even the concept of Christmas and Easter from the thinking of our school children and want no connection with even the recognition of these days inside of our classrooms. You don't have to go very far to find that out, because some of the ADL and its attorneys are battling this all over the United States. I mentioned, and I will repeat this for the record and for the tapes, San Francisco Chronicle a short time back gave us a piece of information. Israel ally was boasting that they had just killed another official of the German government named Mr. Bormann. Then he went to his Jewish doctor, and when he saw him, he recognized him and knew that this was a high Nazi official. Then he came there for some medical attention, and he immediately went to another phone and called the local Jew, Agpu and Gestapo, and though they live in any nation of the world, they run these Agpus and Gestapos. And he said, "What shall I do? I've got Bormann here." They said, "You give him a lethal needle and we'll send some men in there and we'll take him out and bury him. You don't have to worry about it." So the doctor forgot his Hippocratic oath. He gave a needle to Mr. Bormann. The man was dead in a few minutes. He was pushed into a closet. The Jewish businessmen arrived from their local Agpu, and they spirited the body out and canvassed that night and buried it. Then they had the audacity to announce this to the world. They'd accomplished it. And the San Francisco Chronicle just put the story down without any comment. Just said, "Israel I report today that a great patriotic deed was performed by one of their doctors in Argentina who killed Mr. Bormann after advice from Jewish organizations which took his body out and buried him. And this enemy of the Israel I people has been destroyed," said Israel I news agencies today. That's all, no comment. Why, my friends, if it had been anybody else or any other government or any other people, that would have been a big long column, and they would have said, "What power or right has a doctor to violate his oath or move in like this and be judge and jury?" If it had been an Irishman or a German or a Swedish doctor, you'd have never heard the end of it. But because it was a Jew, there wasn't even a diverse comment. I've cut it right out. I have the column from the Chronicle. And then I got another one. They found out a few days thereafter they had the wrong man. And I've got that as a matter of record. If we want to teach our children something, let's teach them to beware of government that operates on this procedure. While we're talking about brainwashing our children, whereas they can't teach them American history, they can teach them the perverted ideas that certain parts of the world in Western Christian civilization are the most dangerous areas there are. You know one of the reasons why they have kept silent General Patton's diaries? You know why they've suppressed it? They didn't want its truth to come out. I'll tell you why. It was almost within our grasp to publish that diary at one time. In fact, we know the kind of pressure and coercion that Mrs. Patton has been under to not publish that diary. We know the threats that were made. Because when General Patton himself came into areas and liberated the people inside of these German camps, they immediately set out with crimes of violence and immoral and unethical conduct that was so utterly lurid and evil that he had to send out the army and gather them up and put them back in again. And General Patton said, "It looks like the right people were on the inside. I didn't come in here to upset the standards of a whole people in order to keep morality, ethics, and common law." But I'll tell you one of the most interesting things, and General Patton saw it, and I have the word of a great number of other of our military leaders and acquaintances which I have in Washington in various branches of military observation and record and testimony that came in from hearings. We try to brainwash one part of our Christian civilization that the other part of it must be utterly evil because the enemies of our civilization that are pushing the Red Revolution have said so. We were told that thousands upon thousands of these people were put in slave camps and they were starved to death. You know what would happen if we were to pick up all the communists in the United States and put them in jail because the Russians started an attack either here or somewhere where it involved us? Do you know what would happen? If we picked up tonight all the known communists and communist agents and all those that the government have that long record of that committees and investigating agencies keep on making them, somebody says, "I don't see any good coming out of these investigations." I don't see any good coming out of it. We investigate, we see trouble, we see the enemy, but nothing's done. They're still walking around. But let me tell you something. One of these days, Russia's going to overplay her hand. Mr. Khrushchev's going to decide he's getting too old. They're going to start to move swiftly against this great Christian nation of God's kingdom. And instantly, we're going to pick up for our own safekeeping every one of these known rascals and communists. And no protection from the Supreme Court or any other institution is going to be able to protect them in this emergency, because for an emergency measure, we're going to put them and lock them up for our own safekeeping. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to look like the ghettos of any area where communism has spawned. And if we today locked up the communists, it would look exactly like the camps of Germany and of Austria and other countries where they locked communists up. In fact, I know that the overwhelming number of these who have been deeply engaged in this conspiracy, though we don't tell our children this in schools, and the schools try to paint the picture in an opposite direction, the overwhelming number of them belong to this international cabal that owns no nation, as essentially to which it's responsible, though it tries to today, under the order of Ben-Gurion, state that all of them are responsibly a part of Israel. But let me tell you this. That in this same strange pattern of revolution and conspiracy, the doctrines with which they are attempting to keep Christian civilization divided from any natural stand in this opposition show the mass graves with thousands of victims laying out with quicklime thrown on them. Now, do you want what the honest evaluation of your own military was? Not the brainwashers and not those that sold out for money. They said that our own bombs fell on prisons. We were absolutely bombing and wiping out and fear playing because we were in a war, and when we're in a war, we have one thing to do, and that's win it. Now, when my nation is in war, my nation must win. That's my responsibility to assist it to win that war. We would have much been better off if all the Christian nations were fighting the one source of world trouble, which is world communism, but the enemy has skillfully designed a way to get us fighting one another. We give no aid or comfort to our enemies because the government no longer recognizes its former enemies as enemies and has begun to realize they are some of our best allies. But I want you to know that at this moment, that the great numbers of people that were bombed and the great numbers of people that died when they were economically encircled and food was scarce had to be buried, and they couldn't burn them in ovens. They had to put them in ditches. And they were made up of Germans, and they were made up of everybody else that happened to have been incarcerated or hit by the bombs, even in the community. In one community, the people that were in prison, the people that were in homes, and the people that were in factories, everywhere were put in one common grave. But along comes the World News Services to say these are the victims of torture. Yes, the modern inventions of man are rather torturous procedures for fighting a war. If you had a mass catastrophe, all the victims of that catastrophe make a mighty big lot of dead people, and they all look alike when you throw quicklime on them. But the fact is that if we have to engage in a conflict with communists and we have to lock them up, the great predominant group will look alike. And it's also going to be quite evident that these are the people that stole your nuclear secrets and stole your missile secrets. And when you captured them, you only found one white woman as preeminently in their company, and that was Elizabeth Bentley, and all the rest of them were Jews. That's a strange thing, but true. It's a historic matter of record. Now, this is a Christian nation. Preservation of this Christian nation means that we must protect not only our spiritual concepts, but we must preserve our way of educating our youth. No country has in the past had more freedom of education than this one. Today, instead of liberty in education, we are now slanting education to give them a misunderstanding of the world situation. Today, a great number of these books are discussing the Congo and all these areas of the world, and they are spending more time in a social revolution in their minds telling them how evil colonialism is than to tell them the history of how a dark and savage continent was developed by Christian nations who colonized, who developed politically and economically while giving education and religion and hospital assistance in every way that medical assistance could be provided as their sacrifice. Now, I'll tell you this. Every once in a while, I see a flicker of anger. So I can see that some of the brainwashing started earlier, and they've even reached some of you. Because I'll tell you, if it was not for the United Nations meddling and for the world government that has been devised by socialistic masters, which is not progressive, there wouldn't be a battle tonight in the Congo with everybody trying to shoot everybody else. If we had left Christian nations alone and the civilization which were apart alone, the law and order in Stanleyville, Leopoldville, and Elizabethville would still be maintained by disciplined soldiers of the Belgium Army, and schools and churches and hospitals would function along with industry, and there'd be some serenity in the Congo. Don't tell me that this progressive revolution is progress. It is not. Within this stretch of imagination, the enemy has been, by its imagination, seeking to overthrow our philosophies of life. I have a book on what's called orientation. This is used in California and other schools. As students come out of the upper grades of what used to be grammar school, but is now junior high, and pass into the high school system, they are started on an avenue of thinking in this school of orientation, and their textbook is an orientation textbook, which has alphabetically divided up all the major subjects that they're to think on. It not only deals with everything from religion to motherhood, patriotism, nationalism, and anything you can think of alphabetically arranged. And when it comes to God, they call this an archaic old superstition of a collection of principles and ideas, sometimes warped and sometimes purely visionary, all embodied in an imaginary personality, which is recognized by many systems of religion, and sometimes there are great numbers of them. That's in your textbook right here in California on God in an orientation class, telling that student that his mother and father may believe this, and that he's not to make any trouble or bring up any deep discussion on this, because let the old folks believe what they will, but you're living in a modern scientific and technological society, and we don't believe this old trash anymore. In fact, I talked not so long ago to a group of smug clergy, and they thought the progressive education and the new educational system was fine, and that maybe it was more important that people learn how to live together than to learn mathematics, writing, and arithmetic. I said, they're not learning how to live together. They're getting a warped idea on how to see their civilization destroyed, their race mongrelized, and the American flag pulled down. Well, that's all right. That's not the church's business. The only church's business is to be spiritual. The only responsibility we have is to teach them to love God and to try to get them to behave themselves in moral and ethical conduct and recognize Christ and believe the Ten Commandments. So all I had to do was just open up the page and say, all right, gentlemen, then your junior high schools are teaching them there isn't any God and that God's an old fogey idea and don't argue with the home folks, but know you're smarter than the people that believe this silly superstition. And then the faces were not quite so smiling, and they weren't winking at one another. They were beginning to get disturbed, because soon they would be out of business. There wouldn't be any need for churches nor preachers either, because there isn't any God and there isn't any reason for anyone to follow this old superstitious philosophy anymore. That's what they were teaching our schools. You know who was responsible for it? A Jew wrote the book. They prove it. Sure, I can prove it. I can pull it right down off of my library shelf and take a look at it. I can take you into schools and high schools that have this among their textbooks. Let me tell you that in this same book of orientation, there is a chapter on parents. Now, you would naturally think that the best thing that the school system could do was teach a mutual respect for parents, a devotion and responsibility for their parents, a love for them under the old standards of at least good biblical soundness. If you train up a child the way he'll go when he's old, he shall not depart from it. And the great fundamental for the first most solid organization of government is the stability of home, and honoring their father and mother is one of the basic principles, which only is preceded by, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might. And Christ said this was the first and the greatest commandment. You know what they said about parents? They said, we want the modern student to recognize that he's under no obligation to his parents at all. That he didn't ask to be born, and he doesn't owe them anything because he's arrived, and that this was the result of their own pleasure, and that he's now here, and whether they wanted him or didn't want him is not important. The fact is that he must look upon them as a part organically of our present society, and when it serves him well, and he doesn't have to get into any difficulty in opposing their positions, why, go along and smile and be happy, but just remember that there's old fetishes about special obligations that sons owe motherhood, and high standards are raised as though there were some spiritual value around motherhood, but they said this was just a biological accident, and that's why you're here. in your high school textbook in the state of California. Now, I tell you, if you want to know the first fundamental cause of juvenile delinquency, it's based around the instruction in schools to no longer honor your father and mother, to no longer have any spiritual law to which you give assent, and therefore no spiritual influence in your life, and that the world is just a mechanistic, evolutionary procedure, and there is nothing but organic, mechanistic purpose. Now, I happen to have here a statement from the concepts of the National Educational Alliance that I think is quite interesting. In this statement, they kind of sum up some of the ideas, and this is one of the strongest organizations on education in the United States. Fundamentally, among teachers, it is telling here just exactly what it thinks as concerning these things. It declares here that God is just a superstition, and there isn't any God whatsoever in any form or kind, and doesn't exist, and there never was and never will be one. It tells you there is no standard of right or wrong other than the accepted social going philosophy of a day. Within the structure of the things that is here discussed, there is nothing that seems to me more distorted than a whole set of principles here being ascribed to by a group of teachers which from their very beginning destroy the whole foundation of our concept of culture and philosophy. He calls for the fact that it is the obligation of the teacher today to abolish foolish nationalisms and develop a responsibility towards a one-world social order in your grammar school, high school, college. Within the same statement made here, and the President of the United States Chambers of Commerce draws up the organization's teaching staff format of what they think on these major factors. And they embrace that Marx and Engels have produced the highest social order for our political and economic management that the world has ever seen. Within this same strategy, they tell us this. Juvenile delinquency is in the reorientation. They tell us juvenile delinquency is the result of the impact upon the mind and memory of the child when maybe in his formative periods he has been punished when the old-fashioned methods of punishment were applied, and this created a nightmare in the child's mind, and he had a desire to get revenge, and so this is the way he took revenge on society. And any parent that used corporal punishment or was involved in any way chastening the child was archaic and was the creator of modern trouble. That the thing to do with these who are called juvenile delinquents is learn to understand them. And that the best way to understand them is to therefore, instead of hampering them, let them express themselves, because what they're waiting for is full expression. And when they get that kind of expression, you get the kind of riots you get in Turkey and in Korea and all over the world. That, my friends, is expression. You get the thing that happened back at the Eastern Beach where they were having the jazz festival and tore the whole town up because there wasn't enough seats in the building. That's expression. You get beatnikism. Now, I don't believe that there's anything basically wrong with American youth because they are the product of their forefathers, and they are the product of a culture which they inherit. And we recognize that the majority of American youth are not delinquents. So there may be a little temporary era of delinquency, if you wish to say misconduct, that might arise in any of them. But let me tell you that the largest contributing agency is the disrespect for spiritual law, for parental control, and for responsible spiritual obligation. And it's being taught at the school level. When you teach communism as a way of life, when you teach that our system of government is not only basically wrong, but the whole way we've been doing business is wrong, when you take a poll of college students to think what they say, what their opinions are of private property, and an overwhelming majority turned in questionnaires, and they said that one of the main things was that private property was in the hands of too few, and that all property ought to be either equally divided up among all people in our nation, or else, they said, that all private property should be confiscated and the government permit people to use it as it as they please and serve the benefit of the social order collectively. John Dewey said that instead of using the words of communism, which would not be accepted under the present mania of our day, we must talk about collectivism. And so the progressive program of education is selling our young people on collectivism and trying to sell them on abolition of private property and private ownership and telling them that they cannot, by any process now known, solve the problems through private enterprise and independence of this intricate social order, that they must therefore build a strong state and know that one of the most important things is security. And if that state promises to give this by any pension system that has been developed by the state, by the gathering of all wealth and the redistributing of it throughout the years in a way that they would not be smart enough themselves to handle, that that's progress. Did you know that when they took a poll of students concerning the programs of the social welfare state, that the majority of college students in our nation approved any tax process that would gather the wealth of the nation and then distribute it in the avenues of permanent pension programs and permanent supply of medical assistance and permanent processes of alleviating all of the hunger and the problems of the nation by equal distribution of the food production and equal distribution of a share in anything that the nation's produced after the government extracted its toll by taxation? Did you know that on a poll, as a byproduct of all of our colleges and schools taken, it was established that the majority of these students, that's over 50% of these students, agreed that the whole idea of private ownership was selfish. Now, that should be an alarming thing if it were not for the fact that they have been subject to a high phase of brainwashing, and that all of the universities in America cannot begin to touch more than 5% of the youth coming out of our high schools that would go into them because there's not enough room. And I've heard a lot of people lamenting, and I have always felt that we needed more areas of higher education and that we could hope that these could be developed so that all of our young people would have the advantages of a college education. But I'm going to tell you this, it is better, my friend, that they, by majority, are never touched with this higher school of treason than to go through it and come out of it without a concept of basic responsibilities that they owe their Christian society. Now, I have been looking at the names, and I've been looking at the records, and I remember that here in the United States of America, that a great wave of political forces were enveloped with a great group of professors with an academic cry that one of the things that was wrong in this nation was that though the government had appropriated money for higher education among our students, that they were being required to pledge allegiance to the United States and take an oath of loyalty to this government in order to receive the endowment which the government was providing for their education. We even had men like Herbert Humphreys, and JFK wasn't so smart on this because he was one of those that proposed and helped to try to put over an abolition of the loyalty oath in the United States for students that tax-supported monies were sending to college. Speaking of these loyalty oaths, shame on your own state legislature, which of course has been deteriorating and rusting under Brown, because it threw out the loyalty oath in the state of California 2 weeks ago. You don't have to get a subsidy and go to school on tax money in the colleges of this state any longer have to pledge allegiance to the United States of America. When that comes, my friends, it's time we had a good old house cleaning in the United States in the state of California. You know, we may need vigilantes. I'm not so sure we don't. You know, I heard the president say a few weeks ago that he thought it was time for America to build a new group of Minutemen at the civilian level without any government control, ready to protect themselves and move for the protection of their society. Only thing was, before he got through, he wanted us to go down and help the sit-down strikers. I'm going to tell you, my friends, it's not the sit-downers, it's the up-and-get-outers that we've got to work on. You know, there's a lot more serious things than somebody hanging, I can tell you that. That's the blighting of the minds of a generation. Better that every communist professor hung
than that the children he contaminates or destroys as any useful citizens in this kingdom of God. The grace of God can handle them somewhere else. We don't need them here. Now let me tell you this. You, many of you, remember how in the state of California years ago, many of you were recruited and with your letters and pressure were helping when we were trying to secure the passage as individual citizens of the removing from our high schools and colleges, especially our tax-supported colleges. In fact, that was the first measure under the Regents Board of all those that were communists or belonged to communist organizations and all these commie professors that came from all over. We wanted them to get them out of our colleges here in California. The state regents voted on it, and they voted that the people were right in their request, and they voted that every known communist professor and every communist Russian exchange professor and any individual that wouldn't take an oath of allegiance to the United States or had a red background was going to be dismissed from the teaching staffs of our California institutions. It was a great victory. But you know who the president was, don't you, that board of regents? The governor. You remember who the governor was? It was our lily white Governor Warren. When the bill hit his desk as president of the Regents Board, he just canceled it out, vetoed it. He told the line of professors in the morning, the reason I vetoed this bill was because I couldn't sleep at night if I denied any teacher their academic freedom to teach on the basis of their political philosophy. I'm going to tell you that communism is a revolution against your nation and against your way of life. It's not just a political philosophy to be compared with the opposing parties of our nation. It is the politics of hell. All right, Mr. Hard-to-go-to-sleep governor. The people didn't like it. You remember how long it took us? It took 2 years. And in the Senate of the state of California, were men like Senator Tenney and Burns and others. And in our assembly, there were good men there who, when this bill was brought before them, and it took a lot of pressure this time, we went out and we talked to Kiwanis, Lions, exchange clubs, veterans organizations. We were not alone because patriotic movement was going everywhere. But our colleagues were many and our strategies were varied. We reached California. We won in California. We got an over two-thirds majority of the state legislature to say that any member of the Communist Party and anyone that wouldn't take an oath of allegiance to the United States of America was to be removed from every tax-supported payroll in the state of California. That was our victory. And the sleepless governor was still on the bench. When the bill was brought up before Governor Warren, he picked up the pen, he put it down and signed it. It was now law. You say, my, somebody converted Mr. Warren. Just political strength. He was only influenced now by the fact that it wouldn't be politically auspicious for him to have vetoed this bill over such a wave of public opinion. He could kill a bill in the Regents Board of the state, maybe nobody'd hear about it, but just a few. But if he killed this one, everybody'd hear about it, so he signed it. We brought that to the attention, as some of you will remember, of the Senate board that was sitting on his confirmation when they appointed him as Chief Justice. We said, how are you going to bring pressure on a Chief Justice to change his mind 2 years later? Where was the academic freedom factor that he talked about? It was only, my friends, the commie line, but now it wasn't auspicious to use it. But I want to call attention to this most important factor. The Anti-Defamation League of the NIBRIT put out a paper called The Record. I have some in my files. I photographed some on 35mm microfilm. We've supplied the Un-American Activities Committee with record and copy. We've supplied Internal Security. We have master file of it beside original papers in which they sent them out to every Jew in California. And they said that the Anti-Defamation League and the NIBRIT was calling on these men to put all the pressure they could on their legislature that any anti-communism was anti-Semitism, since the majority of communist professors that wouldn't take a loyalty oath and professors that were teaching socialism and communism in our colleges and universities were Jews. The measure, therefore, was anti-Jewish because they made up the majority of these professors. Now, that's their admission. They made up the majority. They know their business. They were ever more accurate, maybe, than we would have been. And therefore, they were calling on all Jews, showing that there's no morality, no ethics, and no standard of patriotism or spiritual values in their thinking. They wanted these parasites of evil to bore into the body politic and the educational field, and their only desire was to protect them. So they put that pressure, and I got the copy. They sent out to every businessman, right in their own press, admitting that communism in the teaching staff and the socialization of our students and the attempt to undermine our nation was Jewish, anti-Christian, and non-American. Now, the majority of them were refugees from outside the country. They shouldn't discuss this. Well, how are you going to protect your children from this invasion if you don't discuss the invader? That's what our trouble is. I talked to a communist fighter the other day who makes a lot of money traveling here and there making speeches. And I don't care how much he makes because he's been saying some very good things. And he's been pointing out the menace of communism. But in a few minutes' conversation, I discovered one thing. He knew who was behind communism, but it wasn't auspicious to mention it, and he wasn't going to say who was behind it and how they ran it. He was just going to warn people about communism itself. Let me tell you something. You can be told all about the dangers of a deadly disease. You can be told how its ravages will destroy your society. But if somebody don't tell you where the polluted water is and what well not to drink out of, you can still get sick even though you know about it. There will be no salvation of the bloodstream of our body politic until we get rid of the virus in our midst that causes it, and that is the non-citizen, alien, unassimilatable, anti-Christian revolutionist.
Now, Mr. Dewey and his pals can say, we don't like your kind of America. Well, that's all right, but I want to tell you something. Suppose I tell you that you give me an auditorium and give me a cross-section of American people anywhere tonight in America. I don't care where you get them, except in the Bronx and down in Fairfax. I'm exempting that from the United States. But anywhere in America, let me talk to them for 25 minutes, and I have four-fifths of that group on my side, applauding, working, standing, and ready to do something about it. And I've got half of them, if they were sound asleep, fighting mad and wanting to do something about it. So don't tell me, my friends, that this isn't what America wants. All America wants is somebody to shake them, wake them up, tell them what's wrong, and they want to do the thing that's right. That's why I'm not very much disturbed when someone said, aren't you afraid to say these things? Aren't you afraid to take the stand? Won't they sue you? Won't you get trouble? They won't do that. That'll publicize it and it'll get across the country fast. Let me tell you something. The best way to turn a bunch of hornets loose across the field is to stir them up and let them see how dangerous the situation really is. You just start beating on that hornet's nest, see what happens. Let me tell you, my friends, they don't want the hornets to come out. They've been trying to teach the children of America without waking their parents up to what's going on. Just how many parents do you know that would sit down and clap their hands if they found out that the school they went to told them not to pay attention to their old fogey parents and get along with them because they're smarter than their parents? That's why so many of them come home and think they are. Right. If you haven't experienced this, it's because your children haven't been going to school. I talked to a very irritated engineer the other day. He was one who knew his education. He was a mathematical genius. He knows how to do computations in unprecedented speed. And he also knows all the standard principles of mathematical procedure. And he had the audacity to try to help his young son in algebra. Yeah. Needed help. Showed the young son how to work out the problems, worked out some of them. The son did his homework, finished the problems, the whole process worked out, went there, was right with the right answers. He said, it's all wrong. That's wrong. He says, we don't do it that way anymore. Answers were right, procedure was right, but it was wrong. Let me tell you something. It don't make any difference how you stack those figures as long as you know how to stack them to get the right answers. If the thing you applied is a mathematical law, you know how to apply it, and it was good enough for the engineer and one of the largest aircraft corporations of America, my friends, the very fact that modern and progressive education says it's wrong, it's not done right. And then the boy came home and father wanted to know what happened. He said they wouldn't prove my paper even though I had the right answers. Teacher says, don't know how you got that answer. It was all worked out.
Then finally, they admitted, and had to admit, that they had been done right, but they hadn't been done the way they wanted it done.
So they said, "Now, it doesn't make any difference. Don't pay attention to your father." Outmoded, antiquated, building missiles. Too bad. Time they get through with the sun, you won't get the missile off the ground. Maybe that's part of the strategy, too. No, don't pay any attention to your father and your mother. Someone said, "Where is this going to end?" I tell you where it's going to end. Angry parents are going to wake up. And you know one thing that's starting to boom across America is private schools again. Integration started it, but I discovered something the other day that was rather interesting. They said they took the IQ with a rapid ability to do mathematics and to spell of some of these underprivileged students whose parents had sent them to a private school that didn't have all of the gymnasiums and swimming pools and apparatus that the public school has where they were integrating them. And these students had become 30% more proficient in their studies. Their marks had risen up in the high 90s. And they could do a better job of mathematics, better job of writing, coming out of a little private school with no other assets than a few textbooks and some intelligent teachers. And they now knew what phonetics were, and they had a better understanding of their own language. And this politician admitted to me that what they were now trying to sociologically attack is an insufficient educational system that was going to bring a great curse on America if it wasn't broken, was more efficient than the multi-million dollars we were spending in a brainwashed school learning. You know, I have a lot of appreciation for teachers. I can think of no greater personal sacrifice that requires a great love for humanity and for young people and for children than the life of a teacher, especially at the levels of remuneration over the last quarter of a century that they've received. The patience with which they have taught in the schoolrooms of America. But I am aware today that the institutions that many of them are forced to belong to, and the exception of the pattern of the leaders today in education, which have moved right out of a brainwashed top, are injuring this great profession and reducing it to a menace instead of a blessing. And I am convinced that the average teacher today in all the first and secondary schools would like to be free again to teach as they were taught and to have the pride of seeing their students emerge knowing something. I can tell you that many a college student couldn't pass an eighth grade examination at the level they used to teach the eighth grade. This, my friends, does not mean that I think we're deteriorating to the point where we can't produce technicians, we can't produce scientists, we can't produce any of these things. I'm not frightened by the statement that Russia's producing twice as many technicians as ours because there's a quality of vision and initiative inside of your race. That after we have gotten them out of college, we have to educate them then how to do something, and we teach them. No, they have to finally settle down. Now, what am I going to be? And then they get specialized training in how to do it by the processes we now know, and they emerge knowing something in their own course. I have been rather interested in some individual cases, which also mark one of the things which is helping to save America. I know some young men that became very avid socialists in Stanford. But when they came out of school, they discovered that socialism hadn't taken over yet, and nobody wanted to support them without their working. One of these men went to work in his father's furniture store, and he worked real hard, and was taken into the business and given another furniture store in the next town to manage himself. Then eventually, that was given completely to it. Socialism? You never saw a more avid capitalist. When you, my friends, have to give your farm away, divide up your store, and start working on what you've made, it's a lot different than when you're theoretically dissolving up something you didn't do anything to produce because you've got a socialist professor that's been pushing this into your mind. But I am concerned about this. The attempt to destroy the minds of our children
makes its great inroads when it wipes out at an early age, if they can accomplish it, any spiritual responsibility to God and to his moral and ethical law, to his person or to his identity, and leave a sort of vacuum in the thinking of that child that only the hand of God by intervention and spiritual experience with a sudden start have to wake him up at some future time in his life. That you've lost the great formative period where that spiritual devotion becomes the character-forming element of his life. I want you to know that with this has been time to design in our schools to lower the morale by this peculiar parasite who shouldn't be permitted in it. Mothers came to me in Oakland to tell me that there were professors in Oakland schools who were taking the high school children on field trips that were not only definitely integrating by forcing the Negroes as companions to the young girl, but were actually advocating immoral promiscuous conduct and giving the best grades and giving the best assistance to those that would do this, and they were seeking to bring about a moral depravity which they were citing was the general trend of our social order that they should understand and learn, and this was being done by students on your payroll, and my friends, it was as debauched as you would get in any red light district of the world. And I could start telling you some facts now that would shock you in your seats, facts that I can substitute and produce the witnesses for, of a design to crush and to wipe out any moral integrity that might be left in our young people by a wave of communist-minded destroyers who are teaching in our schools. And I don't think for a moment that I'm charging this to the great majority of our teachers who are in themselves fine, clean, and want to see that standard upheld. But I'm telling you that we have a cesspool inside of our schools of these communist, godless teachers, most of them that are engaged in this are identified by their anti-Christian background, but here they are. And it's time America woke up and cleansed the system of this evil, treacherous disease. We tell you that music appreciation today is degenerated. And there has been an attempt to brainwash our young people by releasing all of the spiritual qualities which music might bring to their senses and supply in its place the depravity of jungle vibrations and rhythm that any intelligent person finds almost driving crazy if he has to stay in the same room with it. The design also is to either force the parents out of the same room with the children or force the children out of the room with their parents, because no intelligent parent will let this stuff play in his presence very long before he says, turn that off or I'll get out or take it out of here. I can't stand this thing. Now, you know what I'm talking about because you've heard it, you've listened to it. You can hardly go into a restaurant before some one of these addicts to this vibration of evil doesn't start playing it in a jukebox alongside. Now, I'm not a narrow-minded old fogey who can't stand anything but what I like in the areas of music or of conduct. But I want you to know that this vibration has been designed to produce a degenerating depravity. It was systematized by jungle savage witch doctors, knowing that this produced utter abandon. And you watch these tempos produce the utter fling of cannibalistic abandon in the orgies of vice and the orgies of their cannibal background. And you can see this today by all the photography and all the facts we have of the way these savages exist in their own homeland. But you bring this here, and you let my friends, the enemies of Christ, start to feed this out to our society and to try to use these vibrations which set up all these reactions to get, my friends, a revolution in the nervous systems of your people. And I charge that this is a part of the revolution. Yes, I can understand some countries that used to break the records. I can understand where they burned a few books. I have great respect for Ann Smart up there in Mill Valley or in San Rafael, who has been conducting a great battle to clean up textbooks inside of our school system, and here in California proved and gathered support of parents and has been waging a battle, and strangely enough, half of the clergymen were not helping her, were opposing her, as she fought to take salacious material, vicious, rotten, and immoral, out of the school libraries and out of the textbook material, while even principals in Mill Valley and other parts of California were fighting to keep this material in. What would it serve? Absolutely nothing but degeneracy and demoralization. And I'm going to tell you, any minister that would sustain the keeping of rotten and immoral text material in our high school should be defrocked and should be discharged by his denomination and his congregations from the pulpit. A battle for the minds of our children. The tree.